the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And Senator Fairley will take his seat. He's the first one up this morning with House Bill 5020, Department of Environmental Quality, C-Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Bill 51 is the enabling legislation approving fee increases adopted by DEQ since July 1st, 1997. According to state law, all state agency fee increases adopted after July 1st of any odd-numbered year must be authorized by the legislature during the next legislative session in order to remain in effect. The fee increases in House Bill 51 are associated with various air quality, water quality, and waste management and cleanup programs. The bill includes no new fees or proposed fee increases for the 9901 biennium. These are either previously approved as part of the 9799 legislatively adopted budget or adopted due to statutory requirements to increase certain program costs. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 51.
Thank you.
Question
for Senator Fairley.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a question. Why are we increasing 100% of the termination fees and 75% in permanent fees?
Madam Co-Chair, the questioner asked why we're increasing certain fees. These fees are required to be increased to cover the cost of programs. And these fees were established by an administrative rule and pursuant to previously approved legislative actions. We're approving these fees today because in the last legislative session we passed a statute that requires these fees to be legislatively approved after they're changed or adopted by rule.
Another question. The major industries under Water Quality Division has a fee of $31,400. Is this a new fee or is this an increase of current fees?
I'll have to defer that question to staff, Madam Chair.
Okay. Staff help with that?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, all the fees in this bill are increases of current fees that were approved in the last budget. Most of the wastewater permitting fees were approved at approximately a 20% increase level. The agency had come in with a request for a higher permit fee than that, and last session the Ways and Means Committee decided to supply additional general funds to minimize the amount of the fee increase to approximately a 20% level.
What about the 100% increase in fees and 75% increase in fees?
Madam Chair, there may be some fees in there that are increased by more than that amount, but I'm not aware of a fee that's increasing by 100%.
It's under determination fees and permit fees.
Madam Chairman, I think the good senator is looking at the 100% of the fees in air contaminant sources and associated fees, and 75% of fees in the air contaminant sources. Those are the percentage of fees from the determinant portion and the percentage of fees from the permit fees, and not a percentage of increases of those fees. It's just an accounting of what the fees are derived from.
Not a percentage of increase. Madam Chair, another question. Why do we need determination fees and permit fees? On those fees together, you determine what is the nature of the application and then grant a permit. Why are they separate items?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I'm not sure the exact nature of these individual fees. I think it's just part of the Title V operating permit program that the federal government requires. And under that program, 100% of the costs of the program are supposed to be paid from fee revenue.
Thank you, Senator. And Madam Chairman, I think the logic there was that in making a determination, there's oftentimes modification of designs or new requirements that are required. So the determination is based on the design specifications that could change. The final permit is issued when the plant actually is going to be put online. I think the it was probably at the request of the industry that there be a future piece of it.
Madam Chair, I've often heard from industry complaining about increase in fees, and I think it just has been increased recently, and I don't understand why is this another fee increase.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, these fee increases were the previous fee increases. These occurred in 1997. The agency's budget for this biennium, the 99-01 biennium, proposed fee increases, but the bill to do that has met a demise in the legislature at this point. So there is, at this point, no fee increase being proposed by the legislature for the PEQ program. These fees were increased in 1997.
Senator Yee, this is a requirement under Senate Bill 333 that we passed in the 1995 session that when agencies adopt fees during the interim, then we have to essentially ratify them. And these are the fees that were adopted by the agency during the interim, as Mr. Rosso has stated. Senator Trojan, any questions?
I was just alerted by, I think it was this morning's editorial in the Oregonian, which talked about not funding regulatory agencies like the DEQ well enough. And I know the governor's budget has some general fund in it, I think, that maybe has been removed from that budget, or at least reduced from the budget. It also had some fee increases, I think, that were contemplated in the budget. Those apparently have disappeared in this bill. The general fund is gone. What about the adequacy of what the agency can do based on what it's supposed to do with the carrier responded to?
I will, Madam Chairman, to the questioner, the adequacy was specified to at the agency hearing regarding this bill, and this bill certainly is connected directly to the cost of the program. The statute requires that the fees cover the cost of the program. I think the questioner's question goes to the larger issue of the DEQ budget, or all the natural resource budgets. And the natural resource budgets have been moving through the same 4% efficiency that every other budget has been contemplating in this budget.
Not anymore. No, we're talking.
We are looking at the tremendous demand to try to fund the 12 budgets.
Yeah.
It's been a very difficult process. It's resulted in cuts in every level of every service, every program the state operates. Most grievous, perhaps, in health and human services, but natural resources is done its part by coming to the river of 4% of industry, just as every other sector of labor needs.
Quite agree with all the assumptions on it, but it was interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, are there any further questions on House Bill 5020? Hearing and seeing that? Okay, I'm just going to get to that. Are there any no votes on House Bill 5020?
Senator, I'll vote no, and just it's a protest vote, because I really do think that we ought to find the resources to fund what we require these agencies to do, and I think they're there if we look for them.
Senator Trell, it's helpful that you vote against their fees.
Excuse me.
I'm trying to find them the resources.
Thank well, you. It's a protest vote. I'll vote for it on the floor probably if they need this vote.
I'm just counting my votes, and we need a roll call.
Oh, do you need?
2, 3, 4, 5.
If you need a vote, you get it out.
No, we're okay. We can move. All right. House Bill 5020, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative King will carry in the House, and Senator Ferrioli will carry in the Senate. Let's moved to House Bill 5049.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 5049 is the Budget State Scholarship Commission. This agency administers state and county funded scholarship programs, the Federal Student Loan Guarantee Program, and the Office of Degree Authorization. The recommended budget significantly increases funding for the state's primary student aid program, the NEED Grant. The NEED Grant assists lower-income Oregonians who attend either a four-year college or a community college. The recommended budget includes a total of $36.4 million for NEED grants, equating to a 15% increase over the current biennium level. The committee worked to distribute these funds fairly and approved two budget notes that direct funding to a result that an estimated 98% of all eligible students will be served. House Bill 5049 will allow the Scholarship Commission to serve almost all of the students who are now left out of the program because of the insufficient funds. The budget notes address the concerns that although the legislature provided relief to OUS students by freezing tuition, we have until now been unable to provide similar relief for students who choose to attend an Oregon Community College or a private college. Under this budget, however, approximately 2,500 more community college students will receive NEED grants in the biennium. Larger grants will be provided to students at private colleges, and total dollar awards to OUS students will increase by over 9%. The budget also contains a number of enhancement packages to allow the Scholarship Commission to improve services in the Loan Guarantee and Private Award programs. These enhancements involve no state funds, but they will allow the Commission to respond to competitive pressures in the loan program and to answer private donor requests for service enhancements. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 5049.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for Representative
Warner? I don't have a question. I would just like to state today I'm very excited about this budget. I'm excited about helping community college students who usually don't get the funding because by the time they get enrolled and decide they're going to attend, the dollars are gone. So we're able to do a budget note that kind of holds back a pot of the money for them to apply for at a later date, and they will be served. So we're real excited that we were able to kind of even out of all those that are able to access these dollars. So, the most sense of the budget.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions or comments? I just would like to really compliment the subcommittee for their work on this budget. I know that there was good participation from all the members of the subcommittee, and you did an excellent job coming up with solutions for the community college students and for the students just all around the state. I mean, to be able to serve 98% of the eligible students is just outstanding. A compliment to subcommittee on their work. Are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 5049? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 5049 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we will go to Senate Bill 5539. Water Resources Department, Senator Fraley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate Bill 5539 is the appropriation bill for Water Resources Department. The department sets and enforces the state's water policy and protects water rights. By state law, all surface and groundwater in Oregon belongs to the public. The department provides for the long-term management of this critical state resource. The agency is primarily funded by general fund, but receives other fund revenues from fees for services and interagency agreements, and a small amount of federal fees and grants. The budget is recommended by the National Research Subcommittee to a limited total of $25.1 million and a non-limited total of $1.8 million. The limited budget includes $20.7 million in general funds, $4.2 million in other funds, and $215,000 in federal funds. The budget recommended by the subcommittee is 61% below the governor's proposed budget. The reduction is primarily due to the removal of the governor's watershed enhancement board from within the Water Resources Department and its creation of a separate state agency. Nearly $29 million in Measure 66 lottery revenue, $6 million in other funds, and $1 million in general funds, and $1 million in federal funds were included in the government's proposed budget for GIGO. These funds were eliminated from the Water Resources budget but will be restored in the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. OWEB will be established as an independent agency with responsibility for administering Measure 66 revenue for salmon stream restoration. The subcommittee approves continuation of the department's final basin adjudication effort with an additional $1.1 million in general funds. budget also includes the friendship of General Flint for two technical positions in water rights processing systems, unable to be continued on other funds due to the insufficient water right applications for revenue. The subcommittee also approved continuation of the Plymouth Water Master position with general fund money. The Water Master had been funded in the 97-98 biennium with emergency boards as part of the Oregon Fund's Steelhead Project. The subcommittee identified efficiency savings from the Water Department loan program and provided a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board to be released to the agency after reporting on groundwater savings. The budget also includes directions for the emergency board reports on legal expenditures, the status of climate communication, and the receipt space and water management planning process. The National Research Subcommittee recommends approval of Senate Bill 5539.
Thank you, Chair Ferriell. Any questions for Senator Schrader?
A little difficult to hear at this end of the table, so I'll probably ask things you already mentioned, Senator Ferriell. I just wanted to go over the reductions. I assume most of that it was accounted for in the change in GWEB to OWEB. Could you detail the total amount that that would be?
The GWEB to OWEB portion, we moved about $29 million in Measure 66 lotteries, $6 million in other funds, and $1 million in general funds, and $1 million in federal funds. And that would all have gone previously through the Water Resources Department budget. So if you total those up, you can get a pretty good approximation of what will be moved into OWEB from the Water Resources
Department. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to comment on this budget. I think it's a good budget. It's moving forward. But I think Oregon needs to be really serious about looking at future impoundments, future supplies of water. We're not doing nearly enough. We've got Senate Bill 93 that we're trying to get funded right now as well. But I think we've got a real crisis coming if we don't start planning for sites and systems of how we're going to get that water to our residential areas. So I'll make that comment.
Okay, Measure. Any other questions or comments? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 5539? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 5539 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now we are moving to Senate Bill 12, Department of Forestry and Dogami, related to landslide hazards. Senator Ferriell.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate Bill 12 is a product of the Joint Interim Task Force on Landslides and Public Safety and establishes policy for protection of the public from rapidly moving landslides. The bill declares a state policy to be the lead property owner and highway user, and federal and state and local governments share the responsibility to sound decisions regarding activities that may affect landslide hazard and associated risk to property damage, personal injury, and damage to natural resources. Four agencies, the Department of Forestry, Geology, and Mineral Industries, Department of Transportation, and the Department of Land Conservation and Development, are directed to implement this bill. The Department of Forestry is to regulate forestry operations to reduce public safety risks and assist local governments in reviewing proposed regulations on or adjacent to high-hazard landslide areas. The Department of Geology and Mineral Industries is to identify and map landslide hazards statewide and supply this information and provide technical assistance and public education to local governments. The Department of Transportation is to provide warnings to motorists on state highways likely to experience rapidly moving landslides. The Department of Land Conservation and Development is to assist local governments in developing siting standards and mitigation measures. The Office of Emergency Management and the Department of State Police will coordinate the state resources for rapid and effective response to landslide-related emergencies. The National Resource Subcommittee approved a general fund appropriation of $134,400. And an $89,600 other fund expenditure limitation to the Department of Forestry. The Department will fund its activities under the Forest Practices Act with 60% general fund and 40% other funds. Also approved with three additional FTEs, which will be added later in the biennium. An appropriation of $247,745 in general funds is approved to the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries with one limited duration position. An additional position was approved in their budget and will be used to implement the Department's Senate Bill 12 activity. The subcommittee passed a unanimous due pass recommendation in support of this bill, and it recommends your approval.
Thank you, Senator Ferriell. Are there any questions? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 12? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 12 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll move to Senate Bill 345, relating to public safety, Senator Hammond.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, members, Senate Bill 345 was sent to the Ways and Means Committee from the House Judiciary Committee. It does several things to address public safety issues, and it increases the Police Standard and Training Board's ability to fulfill its training mission by establishing accreditation standards. Also allows both public and private entities to provide training at the center over at, on the campus of Monmouth. Increases the monthly minimum guaranteed revenue distribution to the Police Standards and Training Board. It also directs the Judicial Department and the Dispute Resolution Commission to evaluate and report on ways to mediate juvenile delinquency matters. And lastly, the bill directs the superintendent of state police to determine the security requirements necessary to safely carry out extradition activities. There was a question arose on the amount of officers who participate in extradition processes. And there was a budget note that was adopted basically that says that adequate staffing will be used to include in these type of cases. And there was no opposition, and we would urge approval.
Thank you, Senator Hammond. Are there any questions for Senator Hammond? Senator Ken Butler?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Relative to the expansion of our public safety personnel relative to our corrections, was it discussed in the subcommittee anything to do with the fact that there are other colleges in the state that are able to provide the training that is presently being provided in Monmouth, some at substantially reduced prices, convenient locations?
If you would give a specific example of what you're referring to, we discussed the training that was provided at Monmouth. It's uniform statewide. In the last session of the legislature, there was a budget note that directed the Police Standards and Training Board to look at Eastern Oregon and look at the possibility of Southern Oregon to providing police training and public safety training to people in those affected areas. It was brought back this session, and this bill doesn't relate to that, but it was brought back in their budget process that right now it's not feasible to have duplication of services out there in the rural communities, that it's more efficient to bring them into the Monmouth campus and do the training.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, the specifically I'm referring to the very successful courses that were and completed at Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario for the several hundred corrections officers there, as well as Eastern Oregon law enforcement personnel, at approximately a third less money per student, and the overhead cost of housing them and so forth there within the communities, significantly less cost to the state and to the Department of Corrections. And that specifically what I'm referring to is that program, in my recollection, received some rather significant state accolades.
Those, Madam Chair, those programs were tuned specifically to Treasure Valley and the Corrections facility over there as a cooperation between Department of Corrections and I think the Police Standards and Training Board was involved in giving some money to that. As far as police training at Eastern Oregon, and we've had the same thing at Southern Oregon, is that the university has a criminology degree there and is tied into training some of the local law enforcement officials. So some of those activities can be met in the local communities, but the general certification and training is done on the campus at Monmouth.
Thank you.
All right. Any further questions for Senator Hammond on Senate Bill 345? Hearing and seeing none, there are no votes. on Senate Bill 345. Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 345 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm showing Representative Minnis as the carrier in the House, and Senator Hannon will carry on.
Yes, sir.
Now we move to Senate Bill 428 related to Student Bill of Rights Program. Representative Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 428 creates the Student Bill of Rights Program. This program will expand educational options for high school juniors and seniors by creating more access to college-level coursework. Under this program, students will be able to earn joint high school and college credit for courses they complete at either an Oregon Community College or a four-year college. The student school district will cover tuition and mandatory costs associated with this coursework. The school district payment is capped, however, and cannot exceed an amount equal to 90% of average per-student funding under the state school fund. High school juniors and seniors will be able to enroll full-time or part-time at a post-secondary institution. This bill represents an important step in Oregon's quest to create a seamless K-16 education system. It expands educational options for students while reducing the cost to students and their families of getting a college education. Senate Bill 428A came for Ways and Means from the Senate Education Committee with a due pass recommendation. The Student Bill of Rights program in the bill is modeled on a similar program operating in Minnesota. Assuming a participation rate similar to Minnesota's, total school district payments to post-secondary schools will be slightly under $4 million per year. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Are there any questions for Representative Leonard?
Mr. Brock. Madam Chair, I'll be voting no on this proposal because it's unfunded mandate for schools. The underlying idea is very good, getting students started on their college before they leave high school, getting those credits. It's an excellent proposal, but the funding mechanism leaves the responsibility to high schools, and they have no say, they have no control over whether these students actually whether it's appropriate. So the person that has the bill has no choice. The institution of higher ed can say no. The student can say no, but the school has to pay the bill on it. So I'll be voting no.
Okay. I just want to add my agreement with Representative Ross and say that I do think this is a good program. I think this is the way we ought to move. I think it ought to be fully funded, though, so that it shouldn't come off the state at the top of the state general fund, not the general fund, but the school fund, and which is general fund funded. Like the idea, but think that it's another unfunded mandate that we need to think about. It'll have roll-up costs into the future, maybe capped at this point, but it'll have roll-up costs.
Senator, are there any Representative Patrick?
My only question or concern is what happens in especially small districts if you have kids opting out and deciding to do this? At what point in time, I'm trying to read through the bill, I didn't see at any point in time when these students have to declare to opt out prior to the year. Can someone speak to that issue? I just don't know how school districts plan around it. I mean, we have the charter schools, you know, stuff that they can plan around. I just don't know how to plan around this when the kids decide to get their hands.
I believe
the parameters is spring before March. March of the year before is when they have to prepare.
Okay. Are there any further questions or comments on Senate Bill 428?
I would just like to close by saying, you know, I agree with the concerns raised, and I said in the subcommittee, if I was writing what happened to this bill, it might look a little different, and it would definitely have the funds associated with the program. But I think on balance, it provides such an opportunity for two classes of kids that are striving to just stay in school, who might be bored but otherwise would be challenged in a college environment, might take this as an opportunity to improve themselves. And then talented and gifted kids on the other end of the spectrum, maybe not necessarily on the other end of the spectrum, but intellectually, but kids who do work hard in school are finding talented and gifted programs not there in K through 12 as they used to be could take advantage of this program. So on balance, and in one of my tough calls this session, I thought that this was a good program, and I'm looking forward actually into future bienniums, this being a standalone funded program. Hopefully we get to the point where we have some kind of reform to our funding of schools where this is valued enough to achieve its own line item apart from K through 12. So that's my long-term hope for it, and that's why I support it, and I urge my colleagues here to do the same.
Excellent point, Representative Leonard. Okay, are there any no votes? I think I have Ross, Shannon. Any other no votes? Senate Bill 428, having received the required Senate Bill 428, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Leonard will carry on the House, and Senator Hartung will carry on the Senate side. Senate Bill 512, relating to building code administration in the Tri-County area. Representative Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 512 creates the Tri-County Building Industry Service Board and Service Center in the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The board and center will provide coordination of building code activities and services in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties. The bill adds a new administrative surcharge on Tri-County area building permits, which is projected to generate approximately $348,500 in new revenue to the department, to the board, and service center. Up to one-half of 1% of an existing surcharge will be used to fund a training specialist in the metropolitan area. The board may also adopt a schedule of fees to cover board and service center costs. The subcommittee approved an other fund expenditure limitation of $503,183. For permanent and one limited duration position, will provide administration and operation support in 9901. The education subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Are there any questions for Representative Leonard on Senate Bill 512? Is there anything none? I'll go to Rob.
Can I ask, what exactly is the surcharge that would be levied to support this activity?
I'm not sure. Has that been determined yet?
Madam Chair and Representative Ross, the surcharge is limited to no more than 1% of the amount of building permits in the Tri-County area.
And and that would be on top of the surcharge that we just raised up to 7%. So that would make the surcharge in Multnomah County 8%.
I think Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas.
Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas.
Madam Chair and Representative Ross, this is a new surcharge on the permits only in the Tri-County area. I'm not clear on the 7%. That may be another amount, but it is a 1% new surcharge.
Madam Chair, through legislation that we've already completed this, or that has already gone through the House, I'm not sure where it is in the Senate, but we have raised the surcharge on local building codes up to 7%. It's an additional 1%, and I'll be voting no because that's too much.
Representative, I would just like to clarify that on that point, they don't have to charge the 1%. It's up to 1%, so they can choose to charge less. So there's some flexibility there. They ask for 1.5. We kept them at 1.
Okay. Representative, are there any other questions on some of the 512? Representative Patrick.
Butler.
All right.
I'm a grandpa.
No, why is this annoying one?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The
the indication is that the activities will be funded by four sources, 1.5% surcharge on permit fees in Tri-County region, half the current 1% surcharge collecting building fees, which are designed specifically for training programs, fees for services provided by the center, and for grants. I guess I have a concern about these breakaway programs that want to administer their own programs separate and apart from the balance of OBCD, and for that reason, I would. It looks to me like that there is a very hefty fee being charged to be able to break away, and I would vote no on it.
Butler. Any other further questions or comments? Are there, I have Representative Ross, Representative Butler has no votes, any other no votes? Okay. Senator Yee? Senator Metzger?
I would like to. I do want to point out that there's a significant representation of a cross section of the industry on the board. It's a 13-member board. There will be local, obviously, building officials from the counties and local governments. But in addition, general contractors will be represented, residential contractors, plumbing and mechanical contractors, electrical contractors, labor organizations with the construction trades will be on this board, fire protection agencies, representative building and owners and managers, and representatives of architects and engineers, in addition to one member of the public. So it is it isn't a traditional board in the sense, or a building agency board in the normal sense. It does have a good cross-section of the industry represented.
I'd just like to make one more comment on this bill. The city did have concern about the fees, but they have become neutral on this bill because accommodation was made for them for better representation on the board, so they are neutral on this bill.
Thank you, Representative and Representative Leonard. Okay, Senate Bill 512, I have recorded as no votes, Rock, Butler, Yee, and Metzger. Okay, Senate Bill 512, having received the required majority, is passed on the floor with the And now we go to Senate Bill 774, Senator relating to green permit program, Senator Trump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you say, this bill relates to the green permit program. It extends the sunset on the green permit program for 3 years until December 31, 2003, so it allows the program to continue to operate. The green permit program was established in 1997 and authorizes the Environmental Quality Commission to issue special permits that provide administrative benefits or reduce the regulatory requirements on facilities that meet criteria established by the Commission. The goal of a green permit system is to encourage the use of innovative environmental strategies not otherwise allowed under existing rules and regulations to achieve better environmental results. The program works as a partnership between the Department of Environmental Quality and participating businesses. Funding for the program is through additional fees paid by applicants to cover the costs of issuing the green permits. General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator Cho. Are there any questions for Senator Cho on Senate Bill 774? Hearing and seeing none, I'd just like to make a comment on this bill. This is a program we started last session, and we did put a sunset on it, and I'm happy to see that the sunset is extended. I think it's a program that can be a win-win situation for both government in terms of reducing regulatory costs to the department and also encouraging industry to exceed environmental regulations and come up with innovative programs. Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 774? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 774 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Nesley will carry on the House. Okay. Senate Bill 909 relating to highway safety, Senator Cannon.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, members. Senate Bill 909 requires the governor to submit a plan for spending $100 million on highway safety. The Committee on Transportation in the Senate, as well as the House, discussed this bill quite some length, referred the bill down to Ways and Means because of potential fiscal impact. It was decided that the bill would apply to future biennials, so it will not apply to the 1999-2001 biennial. It will begin with the 2001-2003 biennial, when it really kicks in. But the idea is to require the governor to present a safety plan on how the governor hopes to address some of these issues of highway safety, such as Highway 18 and Highway 22 and some of the coastal highways and some of the Eastern Oregon highways. There was no opposition to this, and we would urge its passage.
Senator Trill?
Was the governor involved in the discussions about it? Was he comfortable with the bill?
ODOT representing the governor was involved, and they felt that they were probably already going to do it. And they didn't have any disagreement with placing this requirement in the Senate.
Are there any further questions for Senator Hannon? Senate Bill 909? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 909? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 909 is passed before with the passed recommendation.
Oh,
I'm showing Representative Beth is carrying the House side and Senator Shannon is carrying the Now, Senate Bill 948, relating to the Oregon State Boxing and Wrestling Commission, Senator Crayola.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate Bill 948,
did my wife tell you I watched WWF?
The government subsidy by the bill's sponsor to transfer the responsibility for regulating boxing and wrestling in Oregon from the superintendent of state police to the Boxing and Wrestling Commission. The bill also allows the government to appoint the members of the committee. Currently, the superintendent makes these appointments. The bill also provides medical exemptions for suspect professional wrestling groups, which will make it easier for these groups to stage events in Oregon. The bill, as amended, has no fiscal impact on state police or the Boxing and Wrestling Commission. The General Government Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Are there any questions for Senator Farioli on Senate Bill 948? Representative
Schrader,
I'll try to get the name right.
Just trying to get clear. The state police then testified in favor of this bill, is that correct?
They did.
Okay.
Any further questions? Senator Chica?
Just clarification, if I could, about would you repeat what the cost is or is not?
Then there's no fiscal impact in the transfer of the duties from the Oregon State Police to the commission.
So they're just transferring bodies and money and everything goes with it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
Senator Bryant, yes. And then we'll come over here and then back to Senator Bryant.
Is this still funded through a tax on the cable system?
Madam Chairman, there's a 6% privilege tax on the ticket sales and cable broadcast. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Ted the Terrible Farioli, answer the question.
I will, Madam Chairman.
The governor. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say that. the governor indicated he supports.
Madam Chairman, we have no testimony in opposition to this transfer and the gubernatorial appointments of
I'm actually specifically about the exemption for the. Is this the bill dealing with the? Does this have within it the issue of the drug testing for the professional wrestlers?
There was an exemption in this bill that dealt with that issue.
It does. Okay. I understood early on he might have some concerns. But.
Actually, did not, Madam Chairman, receive any negative input on the issue, and it was discussed at length. The other thing that was of interest to the committee was the definition of wrestling as a choreographed event.
That's not true. Sorry to hear that, too.
take that, Randy.
Some members of the subcommittee refer to this as the say it ain't so.
Okay, I believe we did have a serious question from Senator Trump.
I hope it's serious. What's the rationale for making the change? One of the things I remember about the Boxing and Wrestling Commission is that it's been strapped for funds, not been able to be very effective because of that. So are we going from somebody who, the superintendent of state police, who does have some backing to do this, to a Boxing Commission, it's not likely to be effective? Is that what's happening?
The discussion of the state police involvement in the Wrestling Commission and the creation of the Wrestling Commission was that it was a desire to have a much more focused approach to the regulation and a desire to increase the activity significantly. There's been relatively few promotions in the state of Oregon of boxing or wrestling in recent years. It was discussed and determined that there was an opportunity to increase the activity, and I think the Oregon State Police was, superintendent was happy to shift the duties over to a full-time commission that would regulate these activities, become much more involved in the issues of determinations that need to be made, the certifications and licensing. I think the actually the Oregon State Police probably happy to hand this on.
Just a follow-up comment. You know, I can see it's a hot potato, and somebody would probably like to hand it off. But I think there needs to be some effective regulation of this activity. Even if you say that the kind of wrestling you see on TV is choreographed, it may well be, but it's very dangerous choreography at times. You know, some professional wrestler was just killed when he jumped a huge amount of distance into the ring, and he ended up killing himself. And so this kind of thing does need some, I think, effective regulation. And I just wonder if we're getting into a situation where we're not going to have any, and that all kinds of bad things can happen.
Madam Chairman, to the comments Senator from Corvallis, the Oregon State Police Superintendent will still appoint the director of the commission. Still a very tight knit between the Oregon State Police and the tracking of the commission. The bill creates investigative powers that the commission will use as powers of audit, subpoena, and hearing. We think that there will be adequate safeguards in terms of management, managerial authority, and regulatory authority. So I think the bill does what deal with the in terms of one of the shows brought. But of course, we will all need to be vigilant during the course of the biennium and watch to make sure this happens. And I suggest that this committee appoint Representative Leonard as an official WCW ringside observer. Thank you, brother.
I want to say that I'm reassured by what the senator said, and I hope that that's the case, and I'll vote for that.
Thank you, Senator. Representative
Patrick? Sure. My only concern is that Representative Trump and Representative Leonard will use visual aid on so I'd like some indication that won't be the case. I'm willing to vote.
No problem.
Bill. Stuff is not even listed.
That doesn't stop here.
Madam Chairman, it was thought that the tag team carry would be the best approach.
Okay. All right. Well, we better get our friend crap on here then. Okay. Are there any further questions or comments?
With regard to the drug testing stuff, there were some earlier concerns about what types of drugs would be allowed or permitted under this bill as originally conceived. Did the carrier assuage my concern?
If I can, Madam Chairman, the exemption would apply to the courier
drug. Follow up. The only drugs that these gentlemen would be allowed to have in their system would be what kind of drugs?
It's my understanding from the way the bill runs, it's the legally prescribed drugs, those medications that would apply to the control of diabetes, for instance, and other prescription drugs that would be normally available to anybody under a doctor.
Steroids?
It's prescribed by a doctor.
Okay. Are there any further questions on Bill 948?
You want to know?
I'm going to come to that right now. Right. Are you ready for that? Okay. Hearing and seeing no further questions, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 948? Senator Bryant, Senator Yee, any other no votes? I'll be a no vote. So Bryant B. and Lewis are no votes. Senate Bill 948, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Leonard, do you want Representative Krupp added on here?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Okay.
Notice go to the Senate when it's
yes. We think Democrat would like to have a photographer there.
Okay, Representative Leonard and Krupp will carry on the House
perfect.
Side.
Perfect.
And after
perfect.
You're going to have your own tag team on the Senate side, Senator Lim and George are
and Krupp and I will challenge him anywhere, anytime. Tired of the way Lim's been talking about it.
Okay.
We've had enough of this
bill.
Move on to
Senate Bill 1127, relating to MIT
Independent
State Agencies, Representative Butler.
That's a follow, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1127, back in 1997, the legislature established a pilot project to convert five boards to semi-independent state agency status. Those boards included the Board of Architecture Examiners, Landscape Architect Board, the Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying, Board of Geologic Technicians, and the Board of Optometry. The subcommittee concluded that the pilot was a success based upon the testimony that was provided through the examination that we had in our subcommittee. Senate Bill 1127 now converts permanently the five boards from the pilot program and three additional boards to the semi-independent status. These new boards include the Board of Massage Technicians, the Board of the Physical Therapist Licensing Board, the Board of Children's Trustees of Children's Trust Fund. In addition to adding a new agency, the bill also refines reporting requirements so that the boards have appropriate fiscal and performance oversight. Eliminates the sunset clause that protects the restoration rights of the employees after the state's employment status. The subcommittee scrutinized the performance of the pilot agencies and qualifications of the new agencies. We did not accept all of the agencies that desired to move to the semi-independent status, and Senate Bill 1127 is a good step towards encouraging those agencies who have management expertise and the financial stability to operate more independently. The bill keeps the boards in statute and maintains a reasonable level of statutory and legislative oversight. We recommend your yes vote on 1127.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any questions for Representative Butler on Senate Bill 1127? Representative Schrader.
Are their budgets then still reported as part of the overall state budget then?
As other funds.
As other funds still.
Okay. Any further questions for Representative Butler? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 1127? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 1127 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Hampton will carry in the House and Senator Farioli on the Senate. Brings us to House Bill 2088 relating to community development. Senator Hammond.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair and members, House Bill 2088. As the bill came to Ways and Means from the House Agency Performance and Operations Committee, it establishes a Community Development Incentive Project Fund of $1 and sets out financing mechanism that Housing and Community Development Services may use in spending resources from this fund. It also establishes the Advisory Board to develop guidelines and review applications for funding. When and if lottery funds become available, as provided in House Bill 2153, the department is required to come back to the Emergency Board and seek the proper expenditure limitation for the use of these funds. We would urge its passage.
Are there any questions for Senator Hannon on House Bill 2088? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2088? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2088 is passed to the floor with a passed recommendation. Wow, okay. House Bill 2153 relating to the issuance of lottery bonds. Senator Hannon.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair and members, House Bill 2153 establishes a lottery-backed bonding authority for a variety of projects. Within the $70 million cap, there is bonding authority for the following projects. The House leadership early on indicated that they wanted to limit the total bonding with lottery funds to figure around $70 million. And your committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Economic Development Transportation stay within that requested level. $45 million in bonding authorities for economic and community development funds. $17.7 million for Columbia River Channel deepening and $20 million for a Coos Bay natural gas pipeline. And that is dependent on if the voters approve. And if bond capacity is available, housing incentive and parks acquisition projects would then be the next in line. If the bonds are issued for parks or debt service, will be paid out of the Parks Department lottery allocation that they received through the creation of Ballot Measure 66 funds. The Economic Development Department is responsible for identifying when capacity is available. The lottery and other funds limitation is included in the budget bill for the Department of Economic Development. This bill includes $10.2 million of bonding authority for capital construction at the state fair. Debt service for the state fair bonds will be included in their budget, and the proceeds will be included in the capital construction bill. 80% of this limitation, 80% of the $10.2 million, will be withheld in the emergency board until a substantive committee develops a long-range plan for the fair, including the participation by Marion County and the City of Salem. The bill also includes $1 million for the Oregon Garden Project in Silverton, funded through the Economic Development Department. And your subcommittee recommends approval.
Yes, Senator Hannon. Are there any questions on House Bill 2153? Representative Nesbitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a comment. Senator Hannon mentioned that on the Coos Bay pipeline, subject to voter approval. I want to make it clear for the record that this funding from the state is being leveraged. The local community will have to bond themselves for an additional $20 million, and that's what the vote referred to. Also, the Northwest Natural Gas Company is going to put about $10 million at least into the grid once the pipeline's to the communities, and that will cover Coos Bay North, Bend, Myrtle Point, Coquitlam, and Bandon. So it's this area is the largest population in the United States that does not have natural gas, so it's a very worthwhile project.
Thank you, Madam
Co-Chair.
I just wanted to ask a question about some of the remaining funds that are part of the infrastructure project, because it doesn't total, you know, that we don't have a real total here, so it's not really indicated what all is going to be funded in this. And I just wanted to clarify, is the other money for infrastructure intended to be for distressed areas and rural communities?
Correct.
So we won't find any communities there that are not economically distressed.
Correct.
Because they need infrastructure money.
Correct.
Thank you. I think it's a very good deal.
Thank you, Senator.
I just want to ask a question about the bonds for the state fair capital construction. I missed the part about that will be held in the emergency board until they submit a plan.
Not all of it. 80% of the monies will be held back in the E-board because there's some negotiations currently existing between a task force through the Senate Majority Office and the City of Salem and Marion County on how we get the city and the county to the table to participate.
So that would be about $8 million.
About $8 million, yes, sir.
Senator Charles?
Just a couple questions. One on the state fair. Does this money include any money for operating costs, or is this basically for structural improvement?
This is capital construction only to repair and restore facilities that are in desperate need or at the point of closure unless something is done to maintain these bills. The operating budget for the state fair is yet in our committee, and we're scheduled that for Monday or Tuesday. I'm not sure.
Does the operating budget, still mostly other funds, or is there a general fund contribution to it?
I don't recall. I think there is a general fund contribution to it. But, pardon me?
Oh, I can ask that.
Oh, but... But it's combination general fund, other funds, because they rent out part of their space and they do generate revenue. But we'll be dealing with that in the operating budget next week.
Go ahead.
I was going to answer that there will be $700,000, that's the exact amount, but approximately $700,000 operating subsidy to the state share from general fund. And their budget when it's passed out of the sub next week, that will be necessary to keep them from defaulting on revenue bonds that they currently have outstanding.
Thank you. The other question, I'm sure, has to do with the Oregon Garden Project. What is that project and what are we buying with the $1.2 million?
The Oregon Garden Project is a project that was approved in the last session. And I'm not sure the exact dollar amount, but I think it was around $500,000 that was appropriated last session. And this is the last installment for the completion of that Oregon Garden project. So there's quite a support for it. And getting back to the question from the good senator from Washington County, it's a rural community. And this is a high priority that's placed on having this Oregon Garden project in their community.
What are we buying with it? Greenhouses or what?
No, it's a landscape outside garden exhibition area to attract tourists and people to come to the community.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I understand that there will be a feasibility study on Oregon State Fair. And if the feasibility study, when completed, I understand will be submitted around October or November. So is the bond going to be issued if the feasibility recommends no on the capital construction?
That authority is beyond my job description. That would rest with the higher power that might be considered the president and speaker as they co-chair the e-board to make that determination. But I would assume that because of the feasibility setting and timeliness of it, is that no bonding authority would be issued until the report were issued and a determination made on how to fund it, how to pursue it. Mm-hmm. I can't give you that much.
So does that mean no bonds will be issued if the recommendation is not to move ahead?
I'm good staff. It's not right to answer that question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the plan is that the $2 million in initial bonding authority will be issued as part of another bond issuance. The $8 million will not occur until the substantive committee approves the plans.
So, Madam Chair, $2 million bonding will be move ahead?
That's correct.
But why do we want to authorize $2 million if the feasibility says not to? Not to?
Senator Yee, the state of the buildings at our state fair are in such a state that if we don't authorize $2 million to be spent, we may not be able to have a state fair this summer. And there are very needed projects that need to get done just as soon as possible. And given the late day, you know, it's going to be questionable whether those can be done. But many of the buildings are currently unsafe to occupy. And so $2 million is needed immediately to get to even be able to operate the state fair this summer.
Additional question. The reference was made to participation from the city of Salem and the Marion County.
Yes.
And so is the release of the $8 million, is it anticipated that credible commitment on their part to participate will precede the release of the $8
million? It was discussed, but it's not contingent. It is strongly encouraged. In the most strong verbal language that the city of Salem and Marion County should come to the table and participate, because there's ongoing state fair activities that are being used year-round that, in essence, the state is subsidizing the economic viability of Salem and Marion County. And all we want to do is create a level for all the participants come to the table.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Fantastic. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say I'll be voting in favor of this bonding package. I had some of the same concerns, though, about Marion County and the city of Salem being involved in this. We need to repair these buildings so we can have a safe fair, so we don't have health and safety problems. We need to approve something. But, you know, we're requiring Coos Bay, as a result of this bill, to step up. Requiring Coos County to step up and have an election. Marion County, I realize that they don't get the tax benefits by having so many state buildings and state offices here in Marion County, but they really need to step up to the table. They gain tremendous economic benefit as a result of it, having the state fair within the city of Salem, and the advantages of having buildings, convention center types of buildings that other communities across the state don't have. We do need to have state fair. I think it's critically important. That's why I'm going to support this package this time. But my hope is for individuals who are going to be on the e-board that the other $8 million are scrutinized extremely carefully before that's released. I just would share that. That's the only reason I'm talking.
Are there any further questions or comments?
Madam Chair, I just want to thank Representative Meserle and Senator Sarno for their participation on the QSA issue. Without their help and guidance, we probably wouldn't have been able to achieve some of these things, as well as Commissioner Hoodie for being here day after day and not being obnoxious, but close to it. Now, I love you, Nikki. But we're very thankful for your leadership, and this is going to serve a great service to the community of Coos Bay and Coos County, and we commend you for it.
If I might make a comment about this bill, this is a real important package. We have, I think we all know about the problems we have in our rural areas that they have not shared in the economic good times that the rest of the Willamette Valley has, and there are, you know, really good things in this package with the Columbia River dredging, which will be critically important to eastern Oregon, the Coos Bay Natural Gas Pipeline, which will be critically important to the southern Oregon coast, and the water, sewer, and other infrastructure projects that have been targeted to our rural distressed areas, and the livability package, which again will give some needed help to communities trying to develop housing alternatives. This is an excellent package, and I might make a few further comments on the state fair, though we could talk about this in their operating budget as well, but We are one of the few states that has provided no subsidy for our state fair, no operating subsidy for our state fair for 20-some-odd years, and we will be providing an operating subsidy this time in their budget. But the reason why their buildings have gotten into this condition is that we have not been helping them with their deferred maintenance issues, and that is why we now need a bonding package to help them refurbish those buildings. And I would encourage the next legislature to step up to the plate and realize that we're going to need, if we want the programs, the 4-H and the SSA programs that are so important, I believe, to the young people in the state of Oregon, this body needs to step up and be willing to continue to provide funding for the Oregon State Fair for an operating and also to finish repairing the rest of these buildings. Are there any further comments on House Bill 2153? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on the passage of House Bill 2153? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2153 is passed to the floor with a blue pass recommendation. Representative Starr will carry on the House side, and Senator Hannon will carry on the Senate side. And now we move to House Bill 2240, Representative Roth.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2240 requires the Child Care Division of the Employment Department to inspect any child care facility certified or registered by the department if the division receives a serious complaint about the facility. The agency is further required to define serious complaint by administrative rule. This measure directs other state agencies to notify the Child Care Division about child care facility complaints they receive. The fiscal impact of the bill is about $500,000 for the upcoming biennium. The Employment Department's budget that has passed both houses of the legislature anticipated the passage of House Bill 2240 and includes the federal funds to cover the bill's costs. And we recommend approval.
Thank you, Representative Roth. Are there any questions for Representative Roth on House Bill 2240? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2240? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2240 is passed to the floor with a passed recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 2258, relating to crime victims assistance, Representative Minutes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2258 came from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, where it passed on a 6-0 vote. The bill extends the period of time a victim of child abuse is eligible to receive victim's assistance. Under current law, benefits are eligible for 3 years after the initial determination of eligibility. This bill allows victims eligible for benefits to receive them until age 21. The subcommittee amended the bill to increase the Department of Justice's other funds expenditure limitations by $336,384, authorize the department to establish one position, a half-time FTE, and add an emergency clause to the bill. The subcommittee recommends approval of the bill.
Representative, are there any questions for Representative Minutes on House Bill 2258? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2258? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2258 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 2275. Relating to mail, I should say mail theft, probably, Senator Hannon.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair and members, House Bill 2275 comes to the Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee. House Bill 2275 creates the crime of mail theft as a Class A misdemeanor. Currently, Oregon criminal theft laws require prosecutors to establish that the stolen mail has a monetary value in it, such as a check or a credit card or whatever else. Well, federal laws allow prosecution for mail theft without regard to its monetary value. Scarce federal funds have caused the federal government to infrequently prosecute at the federal level. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact of the bill, adopted the -86 amendment eliminating the potential for mail theft the result of the class of felony conviction and concluded that the amended bill may have a small indeterminate impact on indigent defense, and we would urge its passage.
Thank you, Senator Hannan. Are there any questions for Senator Hannan on House Bill 2275? Senator Keita.
I don't have a further question. I just want to give my support to this bill. Bill that I dealt with last session, and unfortunately that the bill was vetoed by the governor, and I'm just very happy to see that we're passing. It is very much needed in this state because people have figured out that they won't get punished for stealing mail. So we have mail theft rings all over this state, and I think this will really help in the state local law enforcement. So I really support.
Thank you, Senator Keita. Are there any further questions or comments on House Bill 2275? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2275? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2275 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Mannix is shown as the House carrier, and Senator Hannan will carry on the Senate side. That brings us to House Bill 2328. Relating to dangerous offenders, Representative Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2328 came to the Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, where it passed out by unanimous vote. House Bill 2328 requires the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision and local supervisory authorities to identify sexually violent offenders released from the Department of Corrections institutions. Furthermore, it requires that such offenders be subjected to intensive supervision during the entire period of their parole or post-prison supervision. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact of the bill and amended it to appropriate $29,534 to the Department of Corrections to cover additional community correction supervision costs and $5,580 to the Board of Parole to cover the costs for additional psychological evaluations. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Westland. Are there any questions for Representative Westland on House Bill 2328? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on the passage of House Bill 2328? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2328 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Timms will.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3246.
Thank you, Senator Kim. House Bill 3246 relates to newborn hearing screening. Each year in Oregon, an estimated 200 babies are born hearing impaired. Many of these babies do not have their impairment detected until age 2 or 3. Often the child's hearing defect is missed by the parent, guardian, and even their pediatrician. This late detection has several impacts. The children have underdeveloped language comprehension and learning skills, and in many of these children, their learning and language skills are not developed. In addition, these children often demonstrate negative behavior in response to their inability to hear. House Bill 3246 provides us the opportunity to prevent the tragedy of a child who never reaches their potential due to a hearing impairment. This bill requires hospitals with over 200 live births per year to test each newborn child's hearing within 1 month of birth. This will catch approximately 95% of the children born in the state of Oregon. The facilities are to attempt to test the hearing of the child prior to discharge. The parents and guardians will be notified of the test results within 10 days of the test. This allows the parent to pursue more complete testing if needed. Children who are only a few months old can be fitted for a hearing aid. Hearing impaired children who have corrective measures taken within a few months of birth develop their language and learning skills like any other child. Those who have delayed hearing correction have a lifetime challenge with speech, learning, and social interactions. Today, the cost of equipment is reduced to the point that you can purchase handheld units for as little as $4,000. Testimony indicated that community service groups are often willing to pay for the equipment. The equipment is easy to use. An audiologist is not required to operate it. A pediatric nurse who already provides other newborn screening tests can easily be trained. The cost per child is minimal. Testimony indicated the cost range from under $10 to $35. Salem Hospital has two levels of testing. Level 1 costs $1 to administer. This bill only requires this initial level. This is an investment for the child, parent, health provider, and the state of Oregon. Special education needs for severely hearing impaired children in rural Oregon can be over $400,000 per child. We urge your full support of this bill. Your Human Resource Subcommittee recommends passage of House Bill 3246.
Thank you, Co-Chair Lewis. Are there any questions, comments? Representative Ross.
Okay. I just wanted to voice my support for this measure because of the potential savings to our system as well as reduction in tragedy in families. Because if we do catch these difficulties early, the child's speech and language can be developed normally, and I think this is a wonderful asset to families. I did want to ask about the timelines for phasing this in. Are hospitals supposed to be able to do this tomorrow, or is there a timeline?
No, the bill was amended in the subcommittee to make the effective date July 1, 2000.
Okay.
Which gives the hospitals approximately 1 year to gear up for this.
And the fiscal impact is $40,000, if that's correct.
To the health division to provide some educational materials and to the hospitals that they can give the parents, and also for them to deal with some of the reports that are going to be coming back to them from hospitals.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Senator Trope.
I just want to indicate that I'm very supportive of this as well. It looks like a very good program. I wanted to know how it was possible to bring the fiscal impact down from 200 and some thousand to 40,000. What was done to do that?
The original version of the bill, I have the original version of the bill. I think had a more extensive structure, and that was eliminating the amendments to bring the fiscal down.
I'm glad you're able to do that.
Thanks, Senator Crow. Any further questions? Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do want to express support for this very excellent prevention program. My question is, why do we want to examine hospitals with births below 200? I think it is important we should include them also.
That's a good question. We were concerned about perhaps the financial burden on hospitals that have less than 200 births a year, and this will catch 95% of the babies born in the state of Oregon. And, perhaps in the future, as the cost of this equipment continues to go down, the state can look at expanding it to the rest of the hospital. The hospitals and birthing centers that have less than 200 births a year will still give a informational pamphlet to the parents so that the parents will know that newborn hearing screening is recommended.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up comment. I'm glad that the parents will still be given information about the need for examination so they can go to a nearby hospital and have it done that way.
Thank you, Senator Yee. Further questions? Are there any no votes on House Bill 3246? Hearing none and seeing none, it is passed.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, we are now on House Bill 3596 relating to sex offenses. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 3596 extends the Ways and Means House Judiciary Committee, where on criminal law we're passed by a unanimous vote. It still establishes public indecency as a Class B felony if a person has a prior conviction for public indecency or another sex crime. Public indecency is a Class A misdemeanor of cases. Currently, the Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the minimal fiscal impact on this bill and confirmed that no additional positions or appropriations were needed. Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval on this bill. Coming from a prosecutor standpoint, I think it's a great bill and it's needed. It's very difficult to deal with people who do this in your community, and they do it on multiple occasions.
oftentimes this is the first step to committing a more serious sexual crime.
I really don't know this bill much at all, but just wondering if public indecency is defined in such a way that people clearly know what they're talking about.
Senator Crow, part of the public indecency law has been on the books for quite a long time. It is to arouse the sexual desires of oneself or the sexual desires of another person. That's how it's defined in the criminal law statute, and that's what you have to prove. That there
this has not been illegal before, we just make
no, it. It has previously been illegal as a Class A misdemeanor. What this does is it changes it on a subsequent offense to a Class B felony. So for a first conviction, you would get an A misdemeanor for a conviction. If you have another public agency, it increases the penalty to make it a felony crime rather than a misdemeanor crime. So it bumps it out of one crime category.
Measure 11, is it affected in the
measure? Measure 11 is not affected. Measure 11 has nothing to do with this bill.
That's public offensiveness.
Any questions? Representative
Patrick? I'm almost afraid to ask this question, but there are major summary says that public indecency includes an act of deviant sexual intercourse.
You're asking Representative Patrick for definition of that?
Yeah, this shouldn't be a problem. We let Representative Leonard walk around in public.
Didn't say deviant behavior, it said deviant sexual intercourse.
Representative Patrick, can you delicately answer that question?
Can I define deviant sexual intercourse? Well, I don't have my statute book in front of me, but I believe that it is defined within the boundaries. It is defined statutorily, and this is my change here. I'm changing the definition of deviant sexual intercourse. Well, so it would not include Representative Truck wearing his hand.
I'm just curious if the Farm Bureau's bought off on this.
I sure will know when it comes to the floor.
Okay.
Do I win?
For that question,
I refer to my previous comments.
Are there any no votes on House Bill 3596? I'm glad you're not carrying her.
Although I may have questions on the
floor. Okay. I don't see any no votes. No votes. Okay. House Bill 3596 having
I'd like to refer that question to staff.
Okay. Council 3596 is passed to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Patrick will carry on the floor.
We think that's a good idea.
Sure, I'll be glad to. Yeah. Right after, I want to do it right after the wrestling.
Okay. All right, Pat, carry on the house floor.
Sherman, if Leonard carries this bill, it might be a simultaneous passage and violation.
There's no emergency clause.
All right, Senator Hanhold, carry on this bill. Get rid of that one. Okay, HJR 28, proposing amendments to the Oregon Constitution relating to the formation of new counties. Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. HJR 28 engrossed proposed an amendment to the Constitution to allow the formation of counties within areas of less than 400 square miles. if the area has more than 100,000 inhabitants. Places the measure on the earliest next special election or primary election ballot. This is passed out of the House, Aiden Gross, that referred to the Senate Committee on Rules and Elections, passed out of the Committee of Few Past Recommendations. The resolution was approved to Ways and Means because of the fiscal impact. The General Government Subcommittee considered the Dash A3 Amendment, which would reduce the fiscal impact by putting the measure on the ballot at the next general election. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval as amended by the A3 Amendment.
Okay, thank you, Senator Cirioli. Are there any questions on H.R. 28?
I would just like to say I do support this measure. There's been a lot of frustration out in this county regarding the treatment of Multnomah County, of the cities, Fairview, Wood Village, Gresham, and Troutdale. There are support of this measure, and I would encourage the it does go to a vote of the people, so that no action will be taken unless those citizens decide they would like to proceed. So I would encourage the committee to vote aye on that.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any further questions or comments on HCR 28? Hearing and seeing none, are there any? Senator Charles, I'm sorry.
No, I don't have questions. Just getting ready to say that I did vote no on four of the Senate, I think, when we have similar bill, and I would, you know, but I'll be going to notice
it. Okay. And Hannon. And Ross. And Kim. Okay, I have recorded as no votes Senator Tro, Senator Hannon, Senator Kim, Representative Ross.
I'll provide courtesy votes, but I may vote this morning.
Counting my vote. How many people do I have missing? Three people missing.
You have enough?
Mm-hmm. I have enough. Great.
Wait. What was it?
It's
I'm a no vote also.
Get with the program.
I think we need a roll call on this.
Madam Chair, if you need a vote change to get the bill out, I'll be glad to change, but I would vote no on the floor of the Senate, but I'll be happy to help get it out of committee.
That is alarm clock. Okay, get rid of it. I have 10-5.
Just a little bit less than
Ross.
Pretty upset.
So, Representative Schrader and Ross voting no. Senator Tro, Cannon, and Kim voting no. HR 28, Housing and Security Required Authority, is passed to the floor with a few past recommendations. Senator Lim will carry. And now we come to our final business of the day, grant applications. Senator Cusum, you have the first one, chronic liver disease in Multnomah County.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Chair, the subcommittee recommends the Joint Legislative Committee on Ways and Means retroactively approve the submission of a federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention grant application in the amount of $250,000 for a program which would evaluate the problem of chronic liver disease in Multnomah County. This particular grant would require that the county have a population greater than 500,000. That's why Multnomah County has been selected for this. And it is established to establish a surveillance system to determine the prevalence of chronic and hepatitis C virus in Multnomah County. The Health Division hire an epidemiologist. I can always say this when I don't have to to work with the Oregon Health Sciences University, Multnomah County Health Department, and the Centers for Disease Control. The team would collect and analyze data and communicate their findings to health officials, physicians, and the public. This $250,000 a year is expected to be funded indefinitely in order to collect data over a number of years. There is no state match required. If the grant is awarded, the department will return to the emergency board for expenditure limitation and position authority, and there would be one position. The request is being submitted retroactively because the grant details were not provided promptly to the Health Division. They actually accepted that they expected for OHSU to be doing this, and then OHSU. The federal government said they wanted the Health Division involved. So this is an excellent opportunity for our Health Division to apply for this grant. I think it would provide us really good information out of their staff.
Thank you, Senator Cusum. Are there any keep trying to teach them, and they're what they wrong.
I'd just like to draw attention to the discussion that we had in subcommittee on this, and the concern that we thought that Marion County should also be included because the budget negotiations with Capital are causing an increase in drinking, an increase in alcohol, and a subsequent liver failure, and we felt that it would be important. However, the chair pointed out that there is a limit of 500,000 population, and so we wouldn't be eligible.
Actually, I think Representative Ross has some talk about a big party, and that's why this ought to be get together, have a big party.
Representative,
actually, I'm real intrigued by the issue of the studying of the hepatitis C. We did a screening, just a blanket screening, about a year ago of every Portland firefighter. 10 firefighters discovered they had hepatitis C through that blanket screening from on-the-job activities from various exposures. Portland Police Bureau is gearing up to do that in the next month or two as well. It has, for some reason, hepatitis C, and I don't know that it's just endemic to Multnomah County, but it has certainly exploded, and it is a fatal disease. It causes the liver to failure over a period of time. And so this is... I'm very pleased. I'm going to be happy to report this back to my other colleagues that this is occurring because it's an issue that I think public safety people in Oregon are more frightened about than anything, hepatitis C. And it's easier to contract than AIDS or any one of a number of other diseases. It's very communicable. It can be transmitted through the eye. If you get blood splashed in the eye, it transmits that way. So, this is good, and I'm actually very pleased to support this.
Thank you. Representative Leonard, are there any further questions or comments on this grant application? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to approval of the grant application on chronic liver disease in Multnomah County? Hearing and seeing none, the application is approved. Senator Yee, arthritis and other rheumatic conditions.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the Joint Legislative Committee on Ways and Means approve the submission of an application to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for a $50,000 grant called Reducing the Burden of Arthritis and Other Rheumatic Conditions. This grant would provide funds to establish an advisory group which would perform strategic planning and produce a document outlining the size and members of the population affected by arthritis, how severely they are affected, what is now being done for them, alternative treatments, and what the effects are on individuals, insurance, and health systems. This group, made up of representatives from the Health Division, Senior and Disabled Services Division, and Oregon Medical Assistance Program, would then submit a plan showing what is needed to cope with and alleviate the problems of arthritis. The grant will have a maximum budget of $50,000 per year, and there's no state match required. If the grant is awarded, the department will return to Emergency Board for expenditure limitation and position authority. The Human Resources Subcommittee asks for your approval.
Are there any questions for Senator Yee on this grant application? For 7 minutes.
I don't have a question. I just want to thank the subcommittee for taking up this issue. Arthritis is usually not on people's radar screen, but it can be a debilitating disease, and if it's treated correctly, people can function quite well with it. So I appreciate the subcommittee raising this issue and applying for this grant.
Just reemphasize what Representative Menace is saying. I've got a young friend of mine who's 8 years old and suffers from a very, very serious debilitating arthritic condition, and this sort of program will enhance hers and many other young people's opportunity to help.
Thank you,
Representative.
Any further questions or comments on the grant application? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the approval of this grant application? hearing is being done. Grant application is approved. And before we adjourn today, I just want to again thank everyone. Haven't done that for a while, but thank all the members. Thank all the members for their participation, and you've all done a lot of hard work, and you're doing an excellent job, and there's a little bit more hard work left to go. So I encourage you to continue working hard, and we are hoping to reschedule our committee party, which will all the faculty members, all the subcommittee members will be invited. We're hoping to reschedule that for Wednesday, July 7th. And staff, and our very hardworking staff who make all the rest of us look good. We're sending a notice about that shortly. We are.
That'll be our. Okay.